You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Welcome back to another episode of Millennial Money. And I heard this about 30 minutes ago. It's going to blow your mind, Alex.
I just got margin called.
No.
And he's not. And he's not joking. I thought he was kidding.
Really? Alex, you're on margin?
A little bit.
What happened? I don't know the details. I told you not to tell us until we get everyone's reaction.
I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless. Alex, of all people, like, I understand this with Jack, but not you, Alex.
Yeah, you know, don't worry. It's not a lot, guys. I don't really keep margin. But the portfolio has gone down a lot. My YOLO portfolio. And I got margin called, and it's only like, you know, $4,000 or something.
No, are you serious? It's $4,000?
Oh, yeah.
That's what?
That's a lot. What happened?
I think like a month or two ago, you know, I the market was down and I was like, oh, maybe I should take out a little bit of margin here, you know? I woke up this morning and everything was down and I got margin called.
Wait, Alex, what in order to lose $4,000, how much did you need to borrow?
No, I didn't lose.
He got a margin money. Call for $4,000.
Yeah, I got a margin call for $4,000.
So how much did you take out?
Maybe six, something like that.
Why? What did you buy? Why? Well, you did not ask. You did, first of all, you ran none of this by me.
Yeah, I don't have margin normally. Like, I never have margin. But, you know, I saw an opportunity and I took advantage of a... what I thought was an opportunity in the market. And, you know... But that's okay because I'm going to cover the money. I'm not going to let it sell.
Tell us what it is.
No, it's in the private portfolio.
It's not in the private portfolio. It's public now. What is it? I called you on it. It doesn't exist anymore. What is it?
Yeah, I basically used some of that margin to go pretty heavy on crypto. So
wait. What crypto?
Terra Luna?
No. What crypto?
No. Ethereum.
Okay. Ethereum?
Yeah, but it's gone down a lot. I mean, I went in once it hit, I think 19 or something like that.
That's not even a terrible... I mean, when you consider that people were buying it at like $4,000, it's not terrible.
I guess it's not like a margin call because they didn't sell my stuff. Well, maybe it is. I've never... been in this position before because I don't use margin, but I just have to transfer money in, which is...
Otherwise, they're going to liquidate. So they basically gave you a warning. If you don't move more money in as collateral, they're going to sell.
Exactly. So they didn't sell. I don't know if that, you know, they said that there's a risk I'll get margin called. So they didn't actually sell my stuff.
Why don't you just take the loss, Alex?
No.
No?
Are you kidding me?
It's going to double down?
Yeah, yeah. Normally, I buy on margin and then I transfer in. But the market's been going down so fast, I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy. And then I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy again. I just haven't transferred any money in. So.
Wow. Yeah.
But normally, I don't have any margin. And you know what? After this... no margin. So
good. Well, that's a rule
that's
to live
every
by.
Addict yeah. says.
Fun fact: I've never played with margin.
Neither have I.
Yeah.
Never.
You guys are much too conservative.
I feel like it's not that hard not to
Yeah, margin. It's really not that
just
hard.
Just don't do it.
If you guys ever did margin, we'd know we are in the biggest bubble in the creation of mankind.
This is true. I just want to say to you, the percentage of my margin is so small compared to like my safe investments. So this is in my YOLO account. I just want to disclaim that right away. Yeah. In my YOLO account, I think I have a total of like 10 or 11K. Probably not anymore. But
decent amount, though. That's a good chunk in the YOLO account.
Man, I was sweating bullets while you were talking to Alex because Graham kept pushing you on what it was, and I was like, don't tell me he owns the chef and he's going to have to sell out. It's going to crash the stock, crater it to the floor.
What would you say if he shorted the chef?
I would say good respect. Job.
Really?
Yeah. What is Dogecoin's at? 5 cents.
So,
jeez. So the Dogecoin Thousandaire is now at...
Break even, almost pretty much.
Oh, so he bought it 5 cents or right around 4 cents?
Around
or?
4 cents.
Yeah, it was. The thing is, I thought he bought around four, and I could have sworn that he continued buying as he got more money. So I don't know if his cost basis is four. I know his original buy-in was four.
Yeah.
I think his cost basis might be probably 5 to 6 cents.
Could be. Yeah. Jeez. Man. Yeah. Imagine going from 3 mil to 200K.
Yeah, I feel bad, and it sucks because it's like I like him as a person. He's so friendly and kind, and it hurts me to feel like we had that opportunity, like it was there. And I remember him watching. All you got to do is swipe right, and you make millions of dollars. Like, but he was so just his entire identity was intermingled with Dogecoin.
We actually spoke this morning, and I told him, remember how I was telling you that crypto goes through these cycles, and I think he thought at the time that he figured out like a system. He's like, no, I understand these charts, and I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Especially after 3 months. I mean, you have to think, you invest $200,000, it turns into $3 million in 3 months.
Yeah.
There's got to be a point where you feel like a genius,
right?
Where you feel like, I just outsmarted everybody. I know something they don't, and if I could do it now, I'll do it again.
Right. That's exactly what I thought.
That sucks.
It's unfortunate.
He would have got blamed, I'm sure, from people if he did sell. He would have gotten attacked and been like, you're the reason it crashed. You're the reason it went down.
But that's why it's so tough to tie your identity to something like that, because ideally, she should have just stayed quiet and sold privately.
Mm-hmm.
And no one would bat an eye. No one would be upset at him. He wouldn't have his career necessarily on YouTube or the following. But I would take $3 million for that. I mean, like, you know?
But speaking of the market, what's happening, Jeremy?
There's a lot happening. It's a crash in the markets.
Well, why are we
everywhere.
Crashing so hard right now?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, we can talk about crypto maybe in a minute. To stocks, that CPI read. Oh, my gosh. I mean, no one was expecting.
Fun fact, I have not seen the CPI reading today.
Why? Yeah. You wait.
Came in worse than
I haven't seen it. Hold on. Let me guess.
Okay.
9%.
No, 8.6, but it's probably way close. Yeah, the real one's probably way over 9. Yeah. But it was so shocking because, you know, we're expecting it to get better, right? Like this one was maybe
it was 8.6 the month before, and then it was 8.3.
No, it was actually 8.3, then it went down to 8 or
no,
8.5.
I thought it was like 8.5, 8.4.
No,
it was like 8.3. Something like that.
Yeah.
The point being, it was slightly higher.
Yeah, so it gave everyone false confidence that like, we're cooling off. This is the inflection point.
We were seeing the market go up because inflation ticked down, and all of a sudden people thought maybe the worst is behind us. We're getting better. If the Fed doesn't have to be as aggressive.
Nope.
But once you see it tick up, after seeing it tick down, that's the big catalyst where people are going to panic.
Yeah.
What's crazy is now the NASDAQ has lost right around actually more than 5,000 points from the top, which is insane to think, because I still remember I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think this was like 2012. I still remember the NASDAQ hitting 5,000. And so it's crazy to think the NASDAQ has now lost more than 5,000 points when the entire NASDAQ a decade ago or so was 5,000.
Right.
Like, that's just crazy to think about how
Which metric on the CPI was the most overweighted in that?
Energy's a disaster.
Right?
Yeah.
Energy shelter's a big one. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, I don't even want to call it like a conspiracy because it's like flat out the truth.
Yeah.
When they use owner's equivalent rent.
Oh, right.
Oh, that shelter number's a BS number. 5.5% or
no
whatever
way.
They had.
There's like, no way.
Yeah. it's double digits.
You know what's funny? It's not funny actually, but my property taxes went up by higher than that. So it doesn't make sense that, you know, they would cap it at 5% when property taxes are up higher than that. Owner's equivalent rent. I'm sure they're asking, you know, Anne, who's lived in her house for 50 years, what would you charge in rent? And she's thinking, oh, back in my 1980s, $800.
They're like, they're like, inflation 2%.
Yeah, inflation came in negative this year. There we go. Time to lower rates.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, so now NASDAQ's down 32-33% from the highs now.
Yeah.
So we're in a real crash, folks. Like, this is a real deal, Holyfield.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, is once we enter a bear market,
S&P was down over 20%.
Yeah,
today.
So we're officially a bear market. Yeah. The average bear market is down 33%.
34.
Oh, 33.8, Andre. If you want to be technical, listen.
Rounding up.
I'm trying to make it easy. You want to make it difficult? Okay. 33.8%. Because that was in my video today.
Yeah.
Okay. It takes
exactly 264 trading days to reach the bottom.
265.
No. Could you imagine?
0.3. No. Okay. Yeah. So for anyone watching, start the time now because we closed the market, S&P 500, which technically on May 20th, we dipped to 20%. On this S&P 500, but we didn't close 20%. So we didn't hit officially the bear market until, I guess you could say, today.
Yeah.
So start the clock now because it takes 264 trading days on average from today to reach the market bottom. Yeah.
But here's the thing. An average is just an average. So you 50% of the time, it's going to be less than that. So it's basically a coin toss if it's going to be less than 30%, if it's going to be less than a year, could be more. So it's so difficult to time it. Because I remember when we entered, you know, a similar position back in 2020, everyone was like, okay, when this happens, the average is this, and statistically, it's likely to do this. And we had, like, we broke records on everything in terms of the shortest ever, the fastest recovery. No one could have predicted that. So I have a feeling in this, too, it's going to be something similar where it's not going to be what people expect it.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
For sure.
What I told people in a video last night is I said, this next 6 to 18 months, this is like one of those rare windows you ever get in life. And there's certain years and time periods when you have to go really hard. And there's certain time periods when you can maybe lay back a little bit and relax, right? And watch Netflix and go on vacations, things like that. I think this next 6 to 18 months, you get your hands on every dollar you possibly can. If that means you got to be an Uber driver, get a second job, a third job, 5 jobs, work 90 hours a week, I don't care what it is. You need to be full on, work every hour you possibly can for this next 6 to 18 months and plow every dollar you possibly can in the market, in my personal opinion. Because every single time we're ever in a crash, it always looks like the end. People are going to say, don't buy, you know, things like that. Every single time you're in the crash, you have to buy. And we're in a real crash now. NASDAQ down 32-33%. We'll probably get into crypto crashing right now, right? If you don't buy during these times, you will always look back and regret it. Always. And that's just consistently, unless the United States is doomed for all of eternity or something like that. And so I'm just a huge believer in, like, you've got to be full go for the next 6 to 18 months and buy everything in sight.
Yeah. And there's
load
a statistic
up
that backs you up because I read that on average, 5 years after a bear market, after this drop of 20%. So that takes us to 2027. Mm-hmm. On average, your portfolio cumulatively has returned 69.9%. So 70%.
Wow. Yeah.
If you could hold on 5 years after this period of time, on average, you'd be up roughly 70%, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and another reason I gave people, that's a great point. Another reason I gave people that advice is also just in case, let's say job losses start coming, or let's say your hours get cut. A lot of people might be watching this at or hourly, depending upon their situation, right? If you have an in at another company, that de-risks you in the jobs market, right? And as somebody that used to be an hourly employee back in the day, it sucked when all of a sudden your hours, you used to get 25 hours and, like, you get 15 hours now.
Did you say you got de-risked?
Yeah, de-risked.
Sorry, Jeremy, we're de-risking you.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. So
the tech industry, it came out today that they've seen the highest amount of layoffs since 2020.
Wow.
Since the start of the pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
So it goes to show you just how quickly things turn around. And it's interesting when you see all the charts. You see, like, we're coming in 2019, 2020 happens, spikes up, and now we're back down to the levels that we were right before.
Yeah.
Some of you guys might be the breadwinners of your family. You are the one that supports your family. You're the one that have to pay the bills, right? The mortgage, your car bill, all those sorts of things. Well, what happens if something bad happened to you, right? Who pays that mortgage? Who pays the car bills? Who supports your family? And as somebody that's a father of three, I understand the stress of that worry about what if something happens to you, right? And that's where life insurance comes in hand. And today's sponsor is Fabric.
Fabric is built for parents so that they can manage their financial future stress-free.
It's fully backed by Vantas, which is one of the oldest life insurance companies in the world, established in 1847, and they offer $1 million coverage for less than a dollar a day.
They also have 1,800 reviews and an excellent rating on Trustpilot with a 4.8 out of 5. Plus, Fabric is quick and easy.
Apply online at meetfabric.com in less than 10 minutes. Coverage can be offered instantly. You can view your quote and customize it at any time. There's no risk to apply, and Fabric has a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time.
Plus, the thing with life insurance is that it only gets more expensive the longer you wait, so the sooner you apply, the less expensive it's going to be.
It's one of those things where you don't think you need it until you do, like card tricks.
How do you do that?
Whoa!
Life insurance.
So again, if you guys are interested, the link is down below in the description to apply and get started today. And now, let's get back to it.
Yeah, many of these stocks are at levels they were in 2017 now, 2018. Mm-hmm. The drop has been extraordinary, to be honest. And like household names too. That's the other thing. It's like, you know, Shopify, Netflix, like these, PayPal, these were the darlings of Wall Street. Like everybody knows these brands, and to see their stocks down 60, 70, 80% is just amazing. Now that takes us to crypto, and that's a whole other mess.
I didn't get a chance to watch your video, but okay. I know you posted one last night.
Yeah, yeah. And that was part, I gave Grandma a shout out in that video for the Celsius situation. Thanks for sending us over that email.
Yeah. You use Celsius, right, Grandma?
So I use a lot of brokerages, but Celsius is one of them that I've used. So I do have some money on Celsius.
What are you holding in there, Bitcoin?
Bitcoin, Ethereum, but... I'm so thankful. I never went all in one brokerage. Yeah. So like I have my crypto spread throughout like 5 to 6 different exchanges. Wow. Celsius being one of them. And Celsius is actually, it's not like the least amount of money that I have between them all, but it's, I think it's like the fourth or third biggest. Okay. That's a decent chunk,
it's not everything.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
What were the rates they were paying?
Oh gosh. Initially it was like 5 or 6%.
Okay.
And I just figured I'd throw it in there and just let it be. I mean, all of this for me was money that, like, when I buy crypto, mentally, it's gone. Like, it may as well be a zero. Okay. And, like, so I'm not losing any sleep over this. It sucks, but, like, I've already written it off. It may as well be zero. But, yeah. And then they lowered their rates, and I figured, you know, I'm just going to hold it anyway. I never paid attention to it. And partially that's my fault to be, you know, I should have been more proactive and you know, deeper in the communities. The writing was on the wall for really the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And I have just focused on other things and not paid attention to that.
So they froze withdrawals.
That's a disaster.
Yeah. Now,
that
I don't want
to panic.
It does. Gosh. I mean, you know, it doesn't look good to me. And so like I just basically just acknowledge whatever's in there is probably gone. So be it, but you know, it could be worse. I mean, people have way more, like in terms of a percentage, the stock market goes down, I lose way more money than what's in that Celsius account.
Yeah.
On on one red day.
And then another crypto company just announce also?
It was Binance was
some kind of transaction got stuck.
Yes. Now what someone presumed, and I'm not an expert on this by any means, was that they were moving a chunk of Bitcoin from a cold wallet to their platform. And in the process, they typed in a low transaction fee. And by doing so, those fees were not prioritized. So everything else above it got filled except for that because of a low transaction fee. I don't know how it works and why they can't just raise the transaction fee. I don't know. I don't know if they've been resumed. Either.
On what blockchain?
On, I don't know. Yeah, Bitcoin.
And that's why I don't think people think that deeply about when they put their money into an institution. So whether it be a bank or, you know, a crypto exchange or a brokerage or anything like that, you got to look at like the capital position these companies are in just in case the stuff hits the fan, as they say, right?
Oh, gosh.
For instance, like the sponsor of our channel, right? FTX US. $400 million they just raised a few months ago. They're in a great capital position. The same cannot be said for all these different crypto companies, right? And so, you know, I think that's just something people should think about moving forward, whether you're with a bank or whether you're with a crypto exchange. Like, no matter what, you should always look at their capital position. Do they have the sort of money around to ride out a downturn?
Did you have Celsius?
No, I haven't. I didn't use them, but I know they're great. I should probably diversify my crypto as well. But I think that there's going to be a lot more of these withdrawal freezes, and that's the I guess the broker's way of maintaining liquidity and stability in the market. Because if they allowed everyone to withdraw everything, that would be chaos.
Yeah,
and I mean, partially if you lock withdrawals from people, it's also partially what contributes to stablecoins falling.
Mm.
Because if I can't move it, I don't care what price it's worth. I just want to exit.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's supposed to be worth a dollar. I'll sell it for 90 cents.
Yeah.
But another guy's going to sell it for 80 cents.
Yeah.
And that's how it starts.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Scary stuff. So make sure whoever you're dealing with, they're well capitalized.
Yeah. Who was it, by the way? I think it was Michael Burry, who said that the crypto market was leveraged 100-1.
Yeah, I believe that.
And I believe that too. I was also shocked when I saw a video, and it was how easy it was to basically do this infinite monetization loop of put your money on a platform, you borrow against it, you take that money to another platform, borrow against it, take it back, and you go back and forth. And it's incredibly easy to go and take like $100 and turn that into, well, maybe $1,000, turn it into $5,000, $10,000.
Right.
So you could basically 5 to 10x your money incredibly easy in like 10 to 20 minutes, and they just overlook it. It's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the fears of regulation. Yeah. With Luna.
This was, by the way, the issue originally with Robinhood. Remember the Robinhood infinite monetization loop?
Yeah, yeah.
Where people were getting like
that
2 to 3.
That was more complicated though. Yeah.
But somewhat similar, but when they're selling, I believe they were selling call options on something, but they didn't own the asset, but it showed their value as mm-hmm. if they had owned it and they could borrow against it and then repeat that process. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there are exploits out there, unfortunately, but it's going to come to bite both them and the brokerage in the butt.
You know, I didn't really believe about the leverage in the crypto system until I heard Alex was leveraged on in crypto. Now I'm a little paranoid. Man.
Alex is the least of our worries.
Yeah, I think he's the most of our worries.
I regret, yeah. You know, I he's a little risky.
Nothing
got sold. I have the money to cover it.
But it's just, you know. I Alex is not somebody I would ever expect.
Neither would I. I didn't even know. Alex didn't even tell me. That's it. We hang out all the time. Never once told me, hey, Graham, I did margin for Ethereum.
Yeah.
Hey, and I was like, what?
I was just trying to lower my cost basis.
So here's a follow-up question for you guys. What do you think it would take for, you know, the Fed to step in and say, okay, let's start decreasing interest rates? Because I know you and I believe that they'll eventually have to pivot at some point.
Yes.
At the same time, though, I don't know if I'm convinced that Papa Powell even cares about asset prices. I feel like his main goal is to bring down inflation and keep employment high.
Yeah.
That's his main goal.
Yeah. Why do you guys think he's going to lower rates?
Well, I don't think it's happening anytime soon.
I know.
Yeah. Just to be clear, but he'll lower rates when inflation gets to somewhat realistic levels. And because here's what's going to happen. Real estate's next up to crash. We already got stocks crashing, crypto crashing. Next up's real estate.
Yep.
Next up's major job losses, not like these minor job losses we're seeing right now. And so they're going to have a recession on their hands. It just, in my opinion, it's like, I would call it like 95% probability. Like 5% would be a miracle if we don't get in a recession. So once you enter that recession and you get inflation to somewhat normal levels, he's going to have to reverse course, in my opinion, at that point in time, because then you have unemployment skyrocketing. You're going to have the administration on him, obviously. You're going to have the people on them saying, what are you guys doing? You know, I got no job. The government food stamps is going to go
when
up.
When do you think that's going to happen?
Because I'm thinking at the earliest, the back half of this year, probably 23.
Oh, that soon?
Yeah.
I think it could be 5 years, six years, 7 years. Yeah. Wow. Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, they would have to get inflation down consistently for that to even be a consideration of bringing down rates. I can't see that happening anytime soon.
What if we start getting crazy job losses earlier than we expected?
Well, then we have stagflation.
Right.
So then what are they going to do? They're not going to let inflation run rampant, because then that risks the value of the dollar. If the U.S. Loses its stability in terms of a reserve currency, screws everything.
Yeah.
So why would they even at job losses? I think unfortunately that's going to be a necessary evil.
Sure.
To go through that for the sake of saving the entire economy from inflation.
No, I'm with you. I think stagflation is going to be the biggest problem.
Dang.
I know.
Yeah.
That's going to suck.
Yeah. I think they're going to see job losses, and they're going to see 8% inflation that's not necessarily going away as fast as they would like.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be faced with the position: do we take job losses or inflation?
Yeah.
So and they're gonna take the job losses.
The thing is, the reason I don't believe that's happening in terms of like this inflation staying out of control for a considerable amount of time is you're gonna have to comp these comps year over year. So in order for inflation to, let's say at this time next year, in order for us to have still 8% inflation, you need the price of oil to go up considerably more than what it already is.
What's that average?
You need rents oils at like 120 ish.
Some people are saying it's going to go to 150 to 180.
Yeah. If it does, it's going to crash down fairly rapidly, in my opinion. But then you need rents to keep going up. Real estate's going to start falling, in my opinion.
Well, rents could continue to go up as real estate prices fall.
You think so?
I do.
Okay.
I think so. Because even my own cost basis is going up, regardless of what the value of the property is. My taxes are going up. My insurance is going up. The repair bills are going up. Mm-hmm. Everything about owning a property has nothing to do with its value.
Okay. And you know what's crazy? So, the median home price in Vegas just went up last month, $488,000.
Well, but a lot of those are based on listings that started 2 months ago or sales. Yeah. So it's probably
backwards looking.
Yeah, whatever we see today, it's going to take us probably 60 to 90 days.
Inventory, though, skyrocketing. I don't know if you guys have noticed.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's doubled.
Mm-hmm. How is your listing going, Jeremy?
Horrible.
What happened?
I've still only had probably two real showings.
So what are you going to do?
I'll tell you off camera what I'm going to do.
You going to rent it?
You going to rent it?
He's basically just going to rent it.
I might do something. We'll see.
You going to move in there?
I might not. You going to rent that house for an office for you. $10,000 a month.
Just 6x, whatever it is, just 6x at like the Volvo.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh gosh.
Oh man. Yeah. So yeah, real estate. Oh my gosh, man. I think it's going to be a disaster. There's no good way out of real estate, in my opinion. I don't see a good way out. Interest rates, I heard, just hit 6% today on a 30.
Yeah, but why? It depends what the reason is why you'd want a way out of real estate. What's the reason you would want an out? I feel like if people buy real estate, they do so with the intention of keeping 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah. No. I meant if you're bullish on real estate, that's what I was kind of referring to. Like, I don't see there's any bullish case for real estate for the next several years.
If
you're talking about interest rates being high for 5 years, mm-hmm. we're crashing real estate.
I would say the bullish case for real estate, I'd say every area is going to be different. Mm. Every market is going to be very local. The benefit now over a year ago is that now you have more inventory and you have scared sellers who might believe, oh crap, the market's going to drop. I better get rid of this as soon as possible. And that could be the time to come in and get a good deal. Now, you know, in the long term, we're going to see if that actually turns out to be a good deal. But if a property's worth, let's just say $100,000 and you go to the seller, hey, you know, you need the money right now. The market's crashing. You just lost your job. Here's $70,000. You might be able to get a taker on that, especially if there's more listings on the market. If they're competing, if I'm not saying you would do this, but like if they're in a situation like you, where let's just say you need to sell it, you don't have a choice, and someone comes in, here's the solution right now, just sign, it's done.
Yeah,
you would take less than probably what the market is worth today, just for the guarantee of taking that deal.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's you think about it for a moment, like if your buyer out there right now, which I don't know who's buying, like who's buying at a 6% mortgage rate right now?
You know, people who want to buy before it hits 8%.
Yeah.
Well, what do you guys think the odds are of that?
What?
70s style interest rates.
Yeah.
I would be shocked. I think for mortgage rates, they try to price in a lot of these upcoming rate hikes. Anything unpredictable at this point is not going to be priced in, but I'd say right now, they're probably pricing in more so 50 basis point hikes throughout the rest of the year. And plus a lot of that's going to be dependent on demand. If mortgages stop completely, they're not going to be able to get away with charging a 7% interest
rate. You know what the other issue is? What's the number one thing, you know, if somebody goes to buy a house, what's the number one reason they usually do it? It is because they're confident, right? Like, I've never heard of somebody buying a house who's not confident in their financial situation. Usually you buy a house, you're confident. The consumer confidence is the lowest it's been by a mile in 25 years. We're worse with consumer confidence right now than during the great recession, right? So I don't see how real estate could be bullish. And then cash buyers, if you got cash right now, why would you go buy right now? When you know 6 to 12 months, you're almost guaranteed.
Right.
To get cheaper prices, almost guaranteed.
Well, I wouldn't say anything is guaranteed.
No,
but, you know,
almost. Would you go buy something right now?
Cash?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't want to tie up that much money in cash. I would say if the right deal came up at a price that cash flows, I would strongly consider it, but no, I would not buy cash just because I don't want to tie up the money.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that's most cash buyers out there right now.
My position is too early to tell with this inflation reading coming in higher. Who knows what it's going to be 6 months from now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. The one thing we haven't had yet is mass job losses. That's the last kind of domino.
I think we are seeing. Well, at least in tech. At least in tech, yeah.
Yeah.
Crypto, fintech.
Yeah.
A lot of those that are seeing job losses, which frankly, I think a lot of them overhired.
Yeah.
They expanded way too quickly and they tried to get ahead of it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, when the music stops, it's like, and you're stuck with too many people.
Yeah.
You have to save the company at some point.
But we haven't seen mass job losses yet, in my opinion. Like 15,000, I think we lost in tech in the month of May. We're losing more in June. But like when you're talking about mass job losses, we're talking like hundreds of thousands of people lose a job in a month. Or like a million.
I find it so odd how quickly things changed. Remember a year ago, you couldn't get enough people.
Exactly.
Like you were offering $50 bonuses at McDonald's just to get people to interview.
Yeah.
There was a shortage. You could have your pick of anything you wanted to do and they'll overpay for that service just to get you as soon as possible.
McDonald's. Did you guys hear the McDonald's story in Russia?
What happened? Oh, they rebranded? Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, they rebranded.
So I don't know if you could tell better Andre or not, but like essentially McDonald's pulled out of Russia. Like it's called sticking it to Putin, you know, we're going to show him who's boss.
They didn't pull out.
Well,
Russia was just like, oh no, you're staying here.
Oh yeah. But like,
we keep you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but now essentially, like somebody in Russia, like basically franchised all those McDonald's, rebranded them as like,
change the logo.
Yeah. Change the logo.
No,
it's the same exact food because they have all the supplies over in Russia, obviously. So the formulas for the chicken nuggets and the Big Macs
in Russia is so hard. Gosh. Because imagine if you're an international investor, would you ever invest in Russia now that you know the government can just repossess anything they want?
I think it makes McDonald's look dumb.
I don't think it's McDonald's fault.
Well, I think they pulled out because of probably political pressure.
Yes.
But I think at the end of the day, they just look silly in the whole situation because it's like, who'd you stick it to? Now Russia gets to keep all that money.
Right.
So, I mean, that's kind of...
So Russia took over the company and stuff. So this isn't McDonald's having ownership and switching it.
So now McDonald's makes no money off that.
Yeah.
But Russia gets to keep all...
They seized all their assets.
Yeah.
Rebranded everything.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so a lot of this sticking it to Putin stuff is not working out. Gas prices, oil prices going up huge. There's a channel I watch religiously. It's called The Maverick of Wall Street. I love this channel. And this guy has a segment called Sticking It to Putin, Brah. And basically what he goes over is like all the screw ups of like everybody was like, we're going to stick it to Putin and we're going to do this and do that. And how everything's worked out the opposite way as they intended. And it's actually ended up helping Russia. And like Putin's laughing at the bank with a lot of the situation that we were supposed to hurt them with. And that's a whole mess. Yikes. But that gets into politics and everything. I don't know if we want to dive down there, but.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop. And even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. And even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
One thing we should dive down is our sponsor, FTX US, which is the best crypto exchange in the world. Very well capitalized compared to some of these other folks out there. And when it comes to FTX, you can do recurring buys right through the app. So let's say you don't want to worry about the price movements and you just want to buy $20 of Bitcoin each week. You can easily set that up right inside the app. So it's absolutely amazing. Take it away, Graham.
With FTX, they have fees that are up to 85% lower than the top competitors, and they're trusted by millions of users worldwide. They also have no minimum fixed fees on transactions, no ACH fees, and a crypto debit card that's accepted throughout millions of merchants worldwide.
Can I take out margin on FTX?
Alex,
just
get
kidding.
Out.
I'll just use the dollar cost average feature to consistently invest into the market.
Thank you, Alex. And you know what? How about this? As a thank you for signing up down below in the description with our code MMFTX, you could get all the way up to $100 worth of free crypto and free crypto on every single trade you make over $10. How's that, Alex?
Great. I would have nothing better.
And it's a great market to get free crypto because it could be worth a lot more in the future.
Exactly. So again, the link is down below in the description.
Oh, Graham, oh, okay. Are you going right. to raise your rents on your California residence?
No.
Oh, but how much?
But here's
a
the thing.
A small amount or a big amount?
Percentage.
Here's what I do. I have to. So before the tenant moves in on those, because those are rent controlled properties.
Yeah.
Before they even move in, I explain to them, listen, whatever price you move in at, I have to raise your rent. The maximum that I'm able to for the city of Los Angeles, it's usually 3-4%. And I tell them this because if I don't do that, if 10 years goes by and I haven't done that, 10 years from now, I can only raise it the 3%
right.
from the base. So I have to, you're forced to do these rent increases because if you don't, you lose it and that compounds over time.
Right.
So I explain that to tenants. And I also tell them, you know what, if that's going to be an issue, we could work something else out where maybe I just give you like half a month of free rent in compensation for that. But I do, and I have to. If they're not rent controlled, I don't. I would rather just keep them as a tenant.
Right. The whole system is backwards.
Yeah.
So for that rent control, if somebody buys that property from you, does that apply to them or no?
What do you mean?
Well, the previous rent, can they only go up X amount, or because it's a new owner, can they set the rent at the market rate?
No. So the new owner inherits those tenants. If they want to move in as a primary residence, you could legally give a rent-controlled unit, I believe it's 60 days advance notice, to move in as a primary. You need to have what's called just cause. You can't just say, I don't like you, you're paying a low price, get out. Can't do that. You have to have a cause. And the cause is either you moving in or you giving it to an immediate family member.
Okay.
They're strict about it, and they do check.
So if you said that that's the primary house I want to live in, that's good enough.
Correct.
Okay.
What if it's the secondary house you want to live in?
It gets dicier. You might be able, you'd probably have to find an argument for that. And then, it's just risky. But even then, it becomes difficult on multifamily because how do you pick? You can't necessarily just pick the cheapest unit or whatever tenant pays the least. Mm. You can't just say, oh, I'm moving in that one.
Right.
You could do that, but they could argue against it if there are other units that would fit your needs. So they're very strict about it. I wish we could just get rid of the rent control and build more. That would be a good solution, but no.
Gosh, yeah. I'm so happy that Nevada doesn't have rent control.
Yet.
You think it'll come?
Yeah, I do.
Oh.
I do. I would just assume every place at some point is going to have some form of rent control.
Wow.
Yeah. Anywhere in California, I think is almost certain. They've been trying to push for a while. This has been going on for a long time for rent control on single family homes. Because right now rent control only applies to multifamily. So two units or more. They've been pushing for single
in
family.
In California.
I have a feeling eventually you get the right person in there and they'll find a way to push it through. And I think it's coming throughout the country.
Most of your properties are single family though.
It's 50-50.
50-50.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I just always assume it's probably going to be
here in Nevada,
there's
not really any multifamily here. Like, at least any good ones.
Yeah, there's not a ton of that. Now, let me ask you guys, I want to take it back to crypto because, we were just speaking about Ethereum, obviously, hit the 1,100 range. Bitcoin hit 22,000. When do you guys think crypto starts coming back? Do you think it's anytime soon? Or are we talking like this year, next year, like 5 years? Like when do we think crypto goes on its next major run?
That's such a great question.
Wow, Jeremy. Yeah, let me tell you the answer to that.
Come on, this is what people expect me to
December
say with stocks.
December 25th, 2023.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
When
here's what we can say. The stock to flow method either has been proven incorrect or we're incredibly undervalued right now.
Okay.
Yeah, stock to flow right now, Bitcoin should be at like, what is it, like 80 grand, yeah, something like that.
It's in the lower band, I would say. It's still acceptable, but there is a price threshold for which it kind of falls apart, and I have to look that up. I don't know offhand.
Okay. Yeah, I would say it's a price threshold plus a length of time in addition to
true.
At what point
but
does
at
it
this
just,
point, I'm saying, like if it drops to 10,000, then I think the model pretty much breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's nothing like short term that gets you super excited that makes you say I gotta buy super heavy.
You
right
know what
now.
It is? I would say a few things. Regulation, I think, would be a really good thing.
Okay.
And when places like Celsius are properly regulated, and under proper supervision, I think that's a good sign.
Okay.
I also think it's a good sign if just cryptocurrency in general they could differentiate and they enforce securities versus what is a commodity, what is a cryptocurrency.
Okay.
That would be great. The other thing is these Ponzi scheme games of just like the Axie Infinities and all these like this. What was the shoe one where you were like
the run?
You would have shoe NFTs.
Oh, I didn't see that.
it's basically this thing where you have to pay $800 for a shoe.
Jeez.
And that shoe, an NFT, gets you the ability to run on your phone and level up that shoe so that you can make like $50 a day. And then that shoe could be worth more money. That gets other people more money.
Interesting.
So stupid. But like, that's...
You said stupid. Andre said interesting.
It's so stupid.
Like, that's an interesting concept.
That's the state of the market. It's like, as soon as any popularity comes around, it's scams. It's all scams.
Wait, but Axie Infinity was a scam?
It wasn't a scam.
No,
but
it's a real game. A lot of people played it.
It's a Ponzi. I mean, but the whole part... The purpose of the game is people aren't playing this for fun. They're playing it to make money. And the entire game only makes money if more people are paying into the game.
But you could say that about anything, like anything. Stocks, crypto, anything. Only people make money
they're backed by a company. Axie Infinity is backed by...
That's like saying play-to-win games are scams. You know how many video games there are that people make money on? It's like real tournaments, real money, sports.
We're talking about a product that only goes up in price the more people buy into it. At least with a company, they're backed by actual assets. And what's an Axie Infinity backed by?
Digital assets, IP. What's
to give that any value?
IP?
Yeah. Who's to say it's a useless? Who's to say it's a useless IP?
Disney makes so much of its money with IP.
But that's Disney. Disney is backed by all of these commercial successes.
True, but that's all IP.
But why would you say that an Axie has any value because it has an IP? An IP
because
could be worthless.
People are playing it. There's a community.
But
there's
they're
a
dropping
effect.
Off. But they're dropping off because new people are buying into them because the prices have crashed.
Sure. But that's not. Doesn't invalidate
just to say
the whole
something,
concept.
It's like people saying there's one of one and therefore it's valuable. It could be a
that's not
piece
the same
of crap.
Thing.
It could be
the,
a piece of crap one of one.
Same thing.
My point is that there's nothing. I could create my own Axies and that doesn't make them worth any money just because it's an IP. What? Be worthless.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
You're that's drawing right. ridiculous parallels.
No, but
you
compared Disney
that's
to
like me saying,
Infinity.
A gram. Well, what if I just build like this playing card, now it's like I made a real thing. It's backed by a physical object. It's worth millions because it's tangible. It's real.
It's a Veblen good.
It's a Veblen good. It's like Graham just makes these parallels, takes them to an extreme, and is like, see, that's ridiculous, right?
I just,
like,
yes, I'm just it pointing is. That Axie Infinity is a Ponzi.
It's not
I think
a Ponzi.
It's a Ponzi.
It's a real game that people played. People in the Philippines were making money. They were earning more money than the average income.
That doesn't mean they could do that doing a Ponzi too.
True, they can, but that doesn't make it a Ponzi.
But it does when it's dependent. When those people making money is dependent on
other people. Okay, where do you draw
the
line between that and crypto or any other investment? Where is the line, does the line get drawn?
I think a lot of crypto is a Ponzi too.
Yes,
I think in Bitcoin's case or Ethereum's case, there are practical uses for that people are using.
Is
but
that
I
different
think,
than playing video games?
No, but for the Axie, people are doing it to make money. They're not.
People buying Bitcoin to not make money.
I mean, they're doing that to make money too. But I think at least in Bitcoin's case, you could look at other institutions using that as a store of wealth or a store of value, and drawing upon that if so many people are trusting into this, and I'm worried about my currency,
right,
and take a risk on this, Axie Infinity is dependent on more people just buying into it and playing this game, and the game is a disguise for basically like this MLM.
It seems like you could draw that parallel for both sides. Like
you could, but
it's
between
picking and choosing.
But Axie objectively is
objectively because I said it.
Because I said it. I just I just think that, okay, that stuff needs to be regulated.
To be fair,
point being,
yeah, there's levels to everything in life. It's kind of like there's a crime, right? You could go into the store and steal a pack of bubble gum. It's a crime, right?
Yes.
You could also, like, you know, shoot somebody or something. Sure. Like, that's a crime too, right? So there's levels. And I think to the whole, like, is it a Ponzi type thing? There's levels, right?
Right.
And it's like, this is like level 10. This is like level 1. This is level 5. So I don't know where this game falls.
Level 10. Know. Level 10.
This
whatever
is the level 10. Okay.
The sneaker one was 100%. No, but
I've never played either of those games. So I'll tell you that.
Yeah. But anyway, I just think that when regulation comes throughout the entire market and it's treated either as a security or they make a very clear distinction, what is a currency, that is going to help. And once everything settles and the price stabilizes, I think we'll get a point eventually where we could get, hopefully, a Bitcoin ETF. I think the Bitcoin ETF is
going to... Spot ETFs, the single biggest thing stopping it from going to 100K. Yes. But right now, because of the macroeconomic factors, plus inflation, plus high interest rates, crypto just can't break the ceiling right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if you can't get people to buy... Netflix stock. You're not going to get people to buy Bitcoin. Like, it's just as simple as that. But now, let us know in the comment section who won that debate. It was a good heated debate. Okay. We don't have many of those on Millennial Money. Okay. Now that Big K left a long time ago. So there's not as many debates.
It's too bad we can't do a poll. Like, underneath,
so
YouTube should allow for polls underneath the videos so you could just, because otherwise it'd just be like
side with you because you're more traditional, whereas I'm a little bit more open-minded with the video game aspect.
No,
I think
you guys could think objectively about it.
It was like pay to play is just a Ponzi scheme, which just doesn't make sense.
No, but it's not pay to play. Pay to play is a great business model for a lot of video games.
Right.
This is a pay to earn, pay to make money. And the aspect of making money is only dependent on more people paying into it.
It's free to play, though. You can play it for free and make money.
Yes, but then you spend your time trying to make money that's dependent on people buying in.
Wait, so it's a Ponzi scheme because you have to spend time?
Yes. Yeah, you're spending time on the game. Time is money. Time is money. Time is money.
What this vacation I'm going on is a scam. Time is.
I feel like that would be something Graham would say in a video. Vacations are a scam.
Vacations are a scam because I'm not making money. I'm wasting all this time.
People could spend their time leveling up.
Alex invited me on a free vacation, but if you think about it, I'm not going to be working. So really, he's trying to scam
me.
Oh, God. I get what you're saying.
We'll see in the comments section. Hey, by the way, last time when you guys were making fun of the inventory, oh my gosh, you guys tore it up with the inventory. I went to the comments. That was disgusting.
Wait, what happened?
So remember last time you guys were like, you guys were like, you said something about all inventory subjects put me to sleep. And I was like, if you are enjoying the inventory discussion, leave inventory in the comments.
Oh, did you get a lot of comments?
Dude,
but
it was hundreds
of people. Here's the thing,
but
only the people who are interested commented inventory. You didn't get the people saying, if you're bored, comment bored.
Yeah, because they were busy sleeping.
Yeah, how about this, guys? If you didn't enjoy the inventory, just comment boring. And we're going to get a whole bunch of comments.
Because all the comments are going to be boring on this episode. They're like, I'm not going to watch this.
This. Just comment, this is a great episode. Jeremy was hilarious.
And boring.
Jeremy was boring, though.
You didn't even get in the debate about the crypto video game, man.
What do you think, Jeremy? I want your perspective.
I don't know enough about it. I was just enjoying
I don't
debate.
Either. I honestly don't either. Yeah. I don't know how to defend it other than just kind of trying to draw that same parallel thinking into other things and saying, where do you draw the line objectively? I'm not sure I understand or follow Graham's like objective line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
My objective line is that it's only a viable model if people are making money on the backs of other people depositing.
On the backs of other people depositing?
Yeah.
You mean investing or...
Oh, I wouldn't call it an investment. Okay. A Ponzi. So you're putting words in my mouth. Investing in a Ponzi.
You're very choosy with your words. You're like depositing.
Yeah.
Am I depositing money when I'm buying my stocks?
but you're buying into a company that produces a product or a service that people could use.
And or it goes out of business and scams people too. That's happened too.
Yes. That is true.
Yeah.
You got Enron.
Things like that.
Yeah. Retailers, it's like, imagine walking through a mall 30 years ago versus like walking through a mall now and like how many different stores are in that mall nowadays versus 30 years ago and how many retailers went out of business that used to be in that mall that just never made it, right?
What do you guys think is going to happen to malls like 20 years from now? You think they'll be around still?
I think they're just adapting, you know, like...
There'll just be Amazon showrooms.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for instance, I think malls adapt. Like, at the end of the day, like, people like to get out of the house and go do something. So, for instance, you know, Summerlin, we got that great mall, you know, that's outdoors, and you got, like, the Apple Store and H&M and all those different types of stores, and it's a different experience. An indoor mall, I don't think, has been built in the United States since, like, 95 or something really? Like that. Yeah, wow. I don't think, or, yeah, I think it's, like 95. It's, like, some crazy year, like, wow, a mall.
This watch would be like 2015. It's crazy. A long time ago.
Let us know in the comments section when the last time a mall was built in the United States. You should be able to Google that quickly. Let us know in the comments section, okay? But yeah, I think they're just going to adapt, be different things. You know what's interesting is a lot of these outdoor malls or whatever, a lot of it's restaurants nowadays and bars and things like that. Even the Summerlin one, a lot of that's, you know, those sorts of attractions. So I think it's just different.
That's
you know?
True.
Different things adapt differently, but yeah, man, what do you guys think about
the like, rich what about the middle class?
Speaking of malls,
I'm going different today.
Middle class doing right now?
I want to talk about the 1%. That's actually we usually talk about the middle class today.
So speaking of malls, talk about silver.
I want to talk about I like silver.
Wasn't silver
it's
up?
Doing horrible. Well, it's doing great compared to Ethereum.
Today. Like, it's my cash backup.
Oh, wow. Silver's down 3.5% today.
Holy
kidding
crap.
Me?
Wow.
I got to log in
okay,
quick.
So, wait, Jeremy, you put in 80K, right?
I put in 100. More than that. It was close to 100.
What's it at right now?
Yeah, I think I'm down like 15%, honestly.
Whoa. Dude, that's insane.
Why cash is the best emergency.
Yeah, in a crashing market, literally, cash is the best thing ever.
I don't know. Yet year to date, it down 8%. Last month, 2%. From the peak at 25, it's down like 20%.
Jeez. Man, yeah, gold is not doing anything. Literally, in this market, nothing's doing anything. It's incredible.
Cash
gold
is staying the same, though.
Cash is staying the same. It's the one time that cash is looking good, man.
Yeah. That's the person who came up with that quote, cash is trash.
Well, Ray Dalio, and he doubled it like a month ago. He came out in an interview, and he actually still said cash is still trash.
Really?
Which was
shocking. What's his alternative?
To me. Buy assets, I guess.
Okay.
Beans, yeah, lentils, ammo.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah.
Concrete.
I think I was on Twitter the other day, and I think Robert Kiyosaki said something like that. Oh. He's like, oh, yeah, you need to be loading up on rice and things like that. And,
yeah. I think it's going to be funny. All those guys who have been saying this for like 10 years are going to be like, I knew it. I was right.
I was right. Yeah. They're doing that right now. They're running victory laps, man. They're running victory laps, and they got their time to shine. I told you guys this in an episode in the past, and you guys laughed at me, but like everybody gets their time to shine.
Yes.
You know, like the crypto people get their time to shine. The stock people get their time to shine. The growth stock people, the dividends people, the cash people are getting their time to shine, which they've been laughed at. What are you doing in cash? Like I got a friend who almost has his entire net worth in cash, literally. And for years, he's looked like an idiot, right? It's like you don't own any real estate, you don't own stocks, like you don't own crypto. Like, what are you doing? Right now, he looks like a genius.
Well, same with Warren Buffett, right? How many times are people making fun of him for holding the biggest cash?
He underperformed a ton in like 2020, 2021.
Yeah. Yep.
Now he's the winner.
Yeah.
Let's see what Berkshire Hathaway.
Oh yeah.
Is up right
while
now.
You pull that up, Ken, Jeremy, have you ever heard of the American Dream Mall in New Jersey?
I have, yes.
Yeah, technically that was built in 2000. It was finished in 2019.
I don't count
long time
that
ago,
one.
Alex. That was a long time ago.
Well, wow, okay. 60 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, 95, though. 2019. Same thing.
So Berkshire Hathaway is down 3.5% today, but year to date, it's only down 6.7%.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. Wow.
But so, that one, let me talk about that one. That one could be a big faller coming. They're extremely heavy in Apple.
Yes, I was going to say that.
Yeah, I do not think Apple's going to do good the next 6 to 12 months. On top of that, very heavy oil and gas stocks. Oil and gas, I think, is, if we're not at peak, we're getting close to peak on those.
I'm not convinced.
Really?
No. Okay. Dude, my portfolio, I was looking at this. I will say this. I bought two stocks, Coinbase and Corsair Gaming.
Oh,
I don't know if you remember. I bought Corsair on Millennial Money.
Yeah.
30 grand. It's down over 50%. It's 53%.
Yeah.
So across those two stocks, my portfolio lost like 75K. And because of it, year to date, my mostly, I guess I will say hybrid. It's hybrid between the S&P 500 and dividend stocks.
Okay.
And I'm down 17%. I was so upset at myself because had I not bought those two stocks, there's a good chance I would have been closer to like
it's true.
10%, 6% maybe, but nowhere near. 18%.
oil and gas stocks were laughed at for the longest time. Yeah. And right now, yeah, guess what? They get their time to shine.
No, I was buying them in 2019. Yeah. Everyone's like, you're an idiot. You should be buying Tesla.
Yeah.
Which in retrospect, well, yeah, I should have, but still.
No. Yeah. like I said, everything gets their time to shine. And but they're, I think it's going to be short-lived. If you notice, every single time we're going into an economic crash, oil spikes up for whatever reason. Going into that, the economic crash happens, oil spikes down.
What's the barrier? $104 a barrel, which is
it's like $115, $120 a barrel.
No, no, no. For what? When it's a recession, it's like there's like a line for when oil crosses a certain threshold.
That's I remember seeing that.
Like
I don't know.
$104 or something.
Like study that was done,
but so, Jeremy, why don't you short oil?
I've considered it. I hate shorting. It's like you gotta stay in like what you know, right? And so, for instance, like I tried options. I couldn't really get into that too much. I shorted Peloton. It went good, but I pulled on that way too soon. Like I took up my profit way too early. That's just not. I also don't like betting against because I'm an optimistic person. It feels. I almost feel weird betting against that something's going to go down or like a company's going to be hurt.
Listen,
or something
I
like
think
that.
If oil prices went down, people would be looking at you as a savior.
Yeah.
Oil prices That's went true. Down. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you saved the economy. You brought inflation down. Yeah. I don't think anybody would be upset at you shorting oil if you believe it's going
to
go down.
Yeah. The other problem with shorting is you have to pay interest on that whenever you short. So,
but do you not think it's going to drop more than the interest you would pay?
I don't know.
The interest can be less than silver.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm just like, I don't know, man. I think shorting is a dangerous game. It's a dangerous game. And then you could start shorting even more and maybe you're wrong.
I think it's all it dangerous. Takes for oil is one more. First of all, I think we have a lot. We still have a lot of demand for travel. That's keeping oil.
Yeah.
People are still driving their cars a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all it takes is one overseas issue.
Mm-hmm.
And oil's going up even more.
Yeah.
And it,
how do you think your car collection is going to be affected in the next 6 to 12 months?
I wouldn't be surprised if I saw a decline. I mean, the GT I bought it's
300.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it went down to 300. My intention when buying that car, I thought it was just going to be going up like 3 to 5% a year. And so that's where I bought it. So as long as I don't lose money on that car, I just want to break even on it. So anything extra is great.
And that's why I want to talk about the wealthy, the 1%. Like, what do you guys think wealthy folks are going to do with their money over the next, let's call it 6 to 12 months in a situation? You think they're just going to sit? Do you think they're going to be out there buying assets? Like, what do you guys assume is going to happen out there for folks that have the big money? Right?
I'm seeing some of my wealthier friends sell a lot of their real estate and just holding cash. Yeah.
Like me? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Like you guys, yes.
Yes. Yeah, no, yes. That's interesting.
Didn't notice.
No, didn't notice that. Kevin? 48 properties sold? No. But in all seriousness, though, Graham, what do you think people are going to do the wealthy is going to do the next 6, 12 months? You think they're going to be out there buying, sitting on their hands?
I don't know. It's so weird because just because they're wealthy doesn't mean they're better investors.
Sure.
They could be really wealthy from like running a great company and just, I don't know. I feel like a good investor would probably just be keeping 5 to 20% in cash and investing as usual and not caring. Probably the investor in the strongest position is the one who doesn't care at all.
Yeah.
And the one who's like, oh, I'm going to sell and move my money around. Either you're probably invested too much. You have too much time on your hands. Maybe you just find it really interesting. And a lot of people are like that. They just love the aspect of investing and trying to outperform.
Yep.
I think probably the strongest investors just buy. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe even didn't know the market went down 3% today. It's just like they wouldn't waste their time on it.
That makes
sense.
That's
what I think.
Yeah. No, a lot of business people don't really keep up with all the macroeconomic stuff that's going on. I've definitely noticed that over time. So, we'll see what happens. At the end of the day, the wealth effect is being killed right now. There's no doubt about that. When you got stocks crashing, crypto crashing, real estate potentially crashing next, the
wealth effect is destroyed. I will say, though, that at least from my perspective, I am more cautious now about where the cash is going to be going. And let's just say a Ford GT comes up for $330, I wouldn't be pouncing on it.
Yeah.
Like I would be a little bit more cautious of any big ticket purchases.
Yeah.
I've always wanted a Keith Haring piece of art.
Oh yeah.
And there was a time, I think about a year ago, where I was considering a Keith Haring.
How much are they?
It depends if you get the prints, $5,000.
Would you get a print or an original?
I would want the original. Okay. Probably the piece I'd want is probably 70 grand, 80 grand. But, you know, again, I see it as something where it's like you get to own it for free and break even and diversify.
Right.
But I wouldn't see that as probably a viable purchase right now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So I would say a lot of those discretionary purchases are going to fall to the side.
Yeah. Yeah, when you see everything continue to crash, it's like, what's the hurry to go out and buy something? It's like a year ago, if you told somebody Ethereum's at 1,200 or 1,100, people would have lost their mind.
I remember when it dropped to 1,800 and then rallied all the way back to like 28. Yeah. But when it dropped to 18, everyone was like, oh my God, they're excited to buy it. Now it's at 12 and people are like, oh, I don't know. Yeah,
that's true.
I don't know.
That's true.
Also, people aren't as flush with cash.
Yeah.
That's the other problem.
No, I was thinking about this. Imagine you're a retiree and it's like, if you're selling your S&P 500 indexes right now, you would be selling at a 20% premium to pay for your lifestyle.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be. I mean, I would feel like if you're within 5 years of retirement, you wouldn't be in the S&P 500.
Or you would be mostly in bonds.
Heavier in bonds.
I think bonds and cash.
Been messy too.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not been good, yeah.
That's true, but I would imagine that you would be more diversified so that you wouldn't be down 20%. You might be down 5 to 10.
This is the kind of market that I think of, you know, 50 years from now, the old Andre, would I rather have a portfolio full of the S&P 500 or dividend stocks that pay me 4%? It's kind of interesting because all the money's flowing into income producing assets right now, like dividends.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that when it comes to, like, say, if you're old and you're trying to retire, you don't want to be holding the S&P 500 right now. You want to be holding something that's producing you income.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I kind of go back and forth. I'm like, man, S&P 500 historically always had better returns than dividends.
Yeah.
Right.
So my dividends only account, the only one I have is green right now. The public account's red. My private account's red.
Your whole portfolio is green?
The dividend account. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when's the last time you invested? When's the last time you invested in a dividend account though?
Good point. It's been a while.
So anything recent. So I have a few dividend stocks. If you bought them recently, they're down.
Yeah.
So, nowhere near as much as the S&P 500 though.
I don't know. I'm sure it depends on the company.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely not even close, but man, crazy markets. Graham, something made me happy. I watched last week's episode, which I was off last week, and something made me happy. You said you cleaned your windows. It made me so happy, man.
Were you telling me to clean my windows?
Oh, you were like, I'm productive, and I feel really happy when I get work done. I cleaned the windows. Remember?
It made me so happy. Well, I did say that. Why? Yeah.
Well, because, okay, so, I mean, everybody's raised differently, right?
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the way I was personally raised, you know, my parents definitely instilled one thing in me. It was to take care of the things you have and to have like pride in whatever it is you have. And so it doesn't matter if you got like a car that's like $1,000, you take good care of it. You make sure it's clean. You wash it. If you got a house, you keep that house clean. You keep it nice. You keep it organized.
Your house is very clean, Drew.
You know, and all those different things. And so like there's something just as a human you get out of having pride that you do those sorts of things. You take care of whatever it is you have. And it's not like you're necessarily putting your materialistic stuff on a pedestal. It's just showing that you have respect for the stuff that you do have.
The thing is, I own them. They do not own me.
Yeah, like
that's the difference, Jeremy.
Respect. Oh, gosh. No, but it
also... Mic drop.
Yeah. And you also get... It's a crazy fulfillment sometimes you get by doing stuff that is not money-making. Like sometimes I'll just clean the dishes randomly.
Oh, sorry. That's what you're talking about. I was like, where is this going?
Like, okay, got it. Graham was like, I remember this was a long time ago. You were talking about like, it seemed like the vibe you were trying to give off is you only get fulfillment by doing money-related things, right?
Time is money, yes.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of fulfillment you can get from doing other things that aren't that, but actually feel just as good, if not better, when you actually accomplish a project where it's feels so good.
That was a day where I wasn't working, and I was just sitting there, and I just want to get stuff done.
Yeah.
And so I did some cleaning. I washed the windows. I had a great time doing that. And you'd be happy about this, by the way. On Saturday...
Mm-hmm.
Can't believe I'm going to say this.
Uh-oh.
No, seriously. I heated the pool.
Whoa!
Yeah, he texted me. He's like, come over, Andre. I heated the pool.
No way.
Oh, I really want to come, man.
It was the one time. And I heated to 84. And because it was so hot outside and the sun was beating down on it, it went to 87 degrees.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So we'll see what the bill is, Jeremy. But if the bill comes in more than like $150, I'm going to come knocking on your door. But yeah, so.
Gosh. But the kicker, the kicker is he actually was making money while he was cleaning his windows. That's the part you didn't know.
I'm just kidding. Oh, yeah. I was like, how did I do that? How really? That's awesome.
You know what else is cool about accomplishing a project like that is then you notice it too. You're like, you walk by the windows and it like looks so nice.
They're not,
like,
they're not perfect, but you know what actually gave me the idea? It was a YouTube short. I got recommended this video by a guy who was like, I heard you could make up to, you know, $10 a window cleaning. Let's test it out. And this is a kid who just like tests out side hustles. And he did it. And he was like, you're able to make $50 to $60 an hour cleaning windows. Just going door to door.
That's right.
And that got me like, I all of a sudden got really into like, wow, I want to clean a window. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
That's how you answer the question of if you had $100, what would you do right now? You're like, I'd buy cleaning supplies and start cleaning windows.
Oh, but yeah, that's what got me into it. It's really difficult. So there's a learning curve. I start because there's like 10 different windows.
Yeah.
So I started the first one, it was so bad. And then by the time I got to the last one, I got it down. So they went back to the first one.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's tough. And even then it's not perfect.
Yeah.
But there's a skill, the squeegee part of it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's funny. My dad was out here a few months ago and you know, he's looking at the houses and he's like, man, if only somebody started a cleaning company, cleaning these windows, look at all your neighbors with all these windows. Like they make a killing.
And I was like, no soliciting. Now I have a no soliciting sign on the door.
Oh, that would stop him.
He'll definitely go away.
Don't knock on this one. Oh, gosh. So,
well, great conversation, Jeremy. With that said, you guys, thank you so much for watching again. Thank you to our sponsors down below in the description. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Make sure to subscribe, hit the like button, comment down below for the algorithm, and until next time.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.